and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai, and with me this week is David Goss and Sean Kay. Today we chat Sarri out, Pirlo in, the MLS's back final preview, MLS return to play, Alphonso Davies versus Messi, Matuidi to Inter Miami, Mo Babouvelli's arrival in the CPL, and once again, another installment of the vaunted Ask AFP mailbag. Fellas, how we doing? Sean, good weekend?
Yeah, it was a really good weekend. It was my 5-year anniversary, so we got to have a nice stay-at-home dinner and just really got to reminisce about the last 5 years. So it was really nice.
What's the highlight of the last 5 years?
Wow, 5 years.
Is that a take?
The birth of my child, Gwen, I think. It was probably
Wait, so 5 years married or 5 years
married.
Since you've known each other?
No, 5 years married. We've known each other for about 7.
Like once you get married, I don't have to continue doing, let's just say, I wouldn't have to continue doing the anniversary we currently do. I just do the new one.
It depends on how sentimental you are. We do both, but we definitely downgraded.
It's a regional thing, David. It's a regional thing, man.
We don't really have a lot of conformity on ours. There's a debate over which the day is, which has turned it kind of into nothing because it's hard to coordinate when one values one and the other values another.
That's the basis of a good relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
Ooh, all right.
The pillars are strong. Oh, man, I never really thought of it that way until you guys just said it. So if you hear me quiet for the rest of the show, there's a whole lot else going on. No, mine is, what is it? She does first date and I do first interaction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But my value is, my date is the day of Michael Phelps's final gold medal as an Olympian, greatest American Olympian of all time. So like I'm getting 2 in 1. She seems less excited about the Phelps thing.
I get you on that one though. Alongside Michael Phelps, I think it's perfect.
Yeah, thank you.
I could see why she's not totally down with sharing the day with Michael Phelps's honor, which I think is pretty like subjective and not objective to call him the greatest Olympian. So
no, American.
I get where she's
Olympian.
Coming.
American Olympian.
Fair.
Yeah,
okay.
Come on.
Okay.
I would never assume that American athletic greatness is considered the same across the world.
Just the tone of your voice. I think it was fair to consider that. But okay, fair enough. I'll be honest here. Like I knew I had such a swing of emotions. I'm in Toronto. I'm a hockey fan. I cheer for the Leafs, and that wild comeback on Friday night, and then Sunday night they were eliminated from the playoffs. It was such a swing from euphoria to pretty down Sunday. So I'm okay, but it wasn't the greatest weekend, I would say. But in one way, I'm kind of happy it's over because now I can barely pay attention to some of these games. Like I don't think I'm going to tune in to Islanders Washington game one. Probably not. So I think it's a freeing kind of thing. Like my mind is kind of freed a bit.
I didn't even know that was the game. So that's why I come on this show to get my hockey updates.
Oh, you're missing out. I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
And I said that, and I said that just now, but I definitely will tune in for that because I with everything coming back now, like my day now is just, I leave it everything on and it's just a constant stream of every league, every sport playing at once. And it's nice to have it back, but it is a lot. Like
it's a
quite
lot.
A lot to absorb all at once. And it's like there was one day last, or even MLS is back when there was no more games. Anyone like, oh, okay. Like that sucks. Like, damn, I'm complaining now already. Like what happened to me? What's going on?
Let's just keep playing sports.
Agreed.
Let's start putting fans in the stands, guys.
Yeah, well,
fans in the stands.
We'll get to these master plan tacticians, tactical brilliance on display from some leagues in North America. But before we do that, in headlines, we want to give some shout outs to our latest patrons who join us. Andre, thank you for joining. We really appreciate the support. We're only 14 away from our goal of 30 patrons. Once we get to that goal, more interviews with players and executives from around MLS and the CPL will be coming your way. So head over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. Lastly, if you signed up already, thank you so much and expect those Upper Deck World Cup cards to come in the mail. Sean went, did the mailing. He's shown us the slips. He didn't embezzle them and put them in account in the Cayman Islands, which one does with Upper Deck cards, you're assuming, right? Because they'll be worth money.
Yeah, that's
value. 10 years down the road, right? That's what everyone's doing.
To so, think about people paying for Patreon, but the value we're returning and having these limited edition, we're basically losing this.
In these turbulent times, who knows what cash will be worth anyways going forward. So I think
you put everything in gold cards. And Upper Deck World Upper Cup Deck, cards. Right. It's, hey.
Just check the mail, David and Devang. You should have a couple cards coming your way as well. So.
Ooh, amazing. Let's go. Amazing.
Okay. Well, we're going to wait till the end of the episode this week to open a fresh pack. So after the break, it's the headlines coming up next. Welcome back to A Football Podcast. Before we start chatting about MLS's return to play plan, as well as the final, we jump into the latest headlines. Sean, hit us up.
It was a busy one this weekend, so let's go to the wildest story to start it off. This past weekend, Juventus crashed out of the Champions League. How much of the result should fall on Sarri, and was firing him the right move?
I'd say the result falling on Sarri, fair and the right move, probably fair if the thought is that this is all about winning the Champions League for this club. It's the central goal. Every Juve fan says it's the goal. They have pretty well shown that Serie A is theirs, and there's no debate about that. But if you're not going to make it past Lyon in a stage like this in the Champions League, then the manager is going to be the first to go. Now, was he given a team to set up? Like, was he set up to succeed at Juventus? I don't think so. And I don't think this marriage was a good one from the start. I think questions are raised at the beginning and it ends with questions as well. So I'm not surprised, David, by him falling on his sword here. And I think when it was made at the beginning, everyone kind of saw it going one of two ways. And this probably had the better odds.
Yeah. Now, any of the things you said, which I agree with all of them, don't like absolve the fact that this is all poorly handled by Juventus, that they hired a guy who over the course of a few years put in one of the best teams, I think, that's played in Italy for a while, in Napoli. Sorry, I have the Man U Copenhagen Europa League game on right now, and it's wild at the moment. So that pulled my eye for a second. What you're getting with Sarri is a guy who can put that system in if you give him time. Chelsea didn't. It didn't work. And then what was Juve's idea? We're going to bring him in for a quick fix. He's not that guy. You put together a pretty old team, but a team that I don't think was complete and had no really distinct style coming into Sarri's time. And then you didn't give him an opportunity to put his imprint in at all. You had, you know, the coronavirus break. So you had a huge gap in the season. And then he didn't win one game and he gets fired. So now you bring in Pirlo, who has zero experience, to do what? Bring this team to a higher level. All of this to me is short-sighted, and it's dangerous for Juve, because I think the Ronaldo signing was the beginning of this. That was a very obviously win now move. And now they're just trying to like keep pace with that and catch up to it. And this whole layoff at the timing that it came, and everything that's going on with coronavirus because of the way they spent their money with Ronaldo early, was always going to put them in trouble. But they're not going to be a better team next year, Devang. And they're not going to be better off for hiring Pirlo over keeping Sarri. So, like, yeah, they lost a bad game they shouldn't have lost. They gave up an early penalty kick. They had a few chances after that. And then you could say, yeah, maybe the emphasis wasn't there and that partially falls on him. But, like, there's no positive going forward for Juve off this.
That they're banking a lot on the fact that I think Pirlo is so beloved, not just around the world, but he's extremely beloved in Turin. And he's someone the fans want to see leading their team. And maybe that gives him a benefit of the doubt when it comes to maybe starting younger guys or maybe going a different way. If it's true, like they're trying to get younger in the midfield and get Tonali or Zanello or like players that maybe aren't typically the guys Juve go after in recent years, the extreme big money guys. Maybe they actually give Pirlo an opportunity to make it a team that they can be proud of, quote unquote. Like, it's an extreme reach. And I think I'm a bit cynical and I'm looking at this like it's a huge PR coup and like comparisons to Zidane, and everyone's talking about the way Pirlo played, and it'll translate to the field, like maybe. But I think at this point, Juve can show they'll win the Serie A in a walk, or even if they do, it doesn't really matter for them. It's about the Champions League, and they maybe catch lightning in a bottle with Pirlo, and maybe they fix their midfield, which is a train wreck, and which you midfield will make you a Champions League winner. Pirlo said it himself. Maybe they do that, or a extremely reactionary club, especially in recent times, cans Pirlo quickly soon after, and we're back at square one.
So I agree with you. What's sad is I don't think Juve was this club when they were going to the Champions League final. They were a step away, and it seems like they've regressed so much just in the way they're handling the club and the thinking through success, which I think is the bizarre part to me, is like they've had this level of success, back-to-back Champions League finals, winning the Scudetto over and over again. I think hitting on a lot of their transfers and not just bringing in good players, but like selling and making money off guys. I think they were clean through a lot of their transfers. And now it just seems like it's all kind of gone off the rails all at the same time, as if they felt like, well, to get in the conversation with all of the English teams and Barca and Real, we have to act like them, which is chaos and spending big. And that feels like a negative for Juve because, yeah, maybe the Italian game right now is a step behind. So you have to do things right. And it's just so bizarre to me that they sold Pogba for the number they sold him for, and they had all the success. They sold Vidal, all those things. And they've really had nothing to show for it.
Keeping up with big teams, Manchester United knocked out Real Madrid. Thoughts on the match? And is this their tournament to lose now?
Manchester City, Sean.
Did I?
You said Manchester United. You wish it was Manchester United. Gosh. Sean stuck in 2005. But on saying that, Real Madrid were really bad in this game. After the Benzema goal, it felt like there was a moment where they could get something done. And the second half, they were just lifeless. Going forward, I still think, even with the matchup against Barcelona, that Bayern Munich's the best team in Europe. And I still like the ability for Atletico Madrid, just based on their pathway, to get to a final. So I'm not saying Manchester City's the favorite in my mind yet. I thought this was the performance they needed, but they were gifted a goal by Real. I thought they reacted poorly to their own goal, and they could never really put the game away as they should have. So I wasn't super impressed by Manchester City Devan coming out of this one. So I'm not sold on them all the way yet.
I think maybe the first 10 minutes impressed me the most, that they were ready to play after their domestic campaign ended. And there was questions like, it's a weird layoff. Some players are going on holiday. It's extremely short turnaround for the next season. Like, how would they look for their central goal? And I thought right away it was impressive. But overall, maybe not the complete performance you want, but who cares? Like, I think for me, Man City is progressing on the right track to peak maybe at the right time when they have to play Bayern or Barca in the semifinal. Like, Lyon's not going to be easy. They've shown that. But Man City looks to me like they'll book their place in what should be a blockbuster. So I'm not blown away, but I think Pep knows what he's doing. And I want to see this so badly because it's an obsession. And I think we all are expecting, maybe as neutrals or as haters, like, is he going to fail? Like, can he do it with this team? But we'll see. And Man City Bayern would be crazy.
It would be. I agree with you. What's so funny, because you mentioned it and we didn't even say it, Lyon knocked out Juventus and no one has mentioned Lyon.
No, like, they didn't. They're not even in Europe at all next year, right? Like, this is like a lark, basically. Yeah. They're like, all right, let's see.
And for, I don't know about you, but for the coverage here in the US, CBS taking over, they have like the studio out in England. So it's all English points of view. Roberto Martinez is on there as well. Whatever. Comes out. They slam Juve for like 10 minutes. They moved on to Man City. Then they came back to slam Juve a little bit more. And then at some point it was like, oh, and Lyon qualified for the next round, which is massive for the club, as you said. So it's been pretty funny to watch.
Keeping on with the quarterfinals, you guys sort of chatted about Barcelona and Bayern Munich. First question is the three-headed monster of Messi, De Jong, and Semedo the toughest day at the office for Alphonso Davies so far? And how will Munich cope down that one side?
So far, perhaps. Perhaps you could say, I think Messi, dream matchup. Alphonso Davies, probably, I don't know, maybe he did think this would be where he was going to be at 5 years ago, 8 years ago. Maybe he was that clairvoyant and he knew he was going to be a superstar already, but it's going to be nuts for him to play against Messi. Although, I mean, on paper, it's a mess for Alphonso Davies to consider. I think Bayern should be okay. Like, I feel like this matchup, it's wonderful on paper, but Barcelona has some big time problems. And I, even though that Napoli game was super weird, I think the one takeaway I had from it was I'm still not super convinced any of these people care for each other or want to play for each other or have any sort of cohesion. So I don't think it's going to be super, super stressful on the field, maybe for Alphonso, but I think seeing Messi up close playing against him has got to be a box checked in terms of his dream journey.
Yeah, it'll be awesome to watch him go up against Messi because you got to make the decision. Do you track him inside? How do you hand him off? You saw the goal against Napoli when he falls down. It's like there are things he can do that no one else can do. I think throughout that play, it felt like he was closed down. And I thought Koulibaly actually was a little bit too relaxed. Like, oh, I don't want to foul him in the box. And then he scores and you're like, oh, right, it's Messi. Like, you have to do everything you can do because he's going to stand up and curl one off the far post. Clearly, that's a thing that people do in the world now. So it's a tough challenge, but I would agree with Devang. They didn't look good against Napoli. And I actually thought Napoli controlled large chunks of the game. And it wasn't because Barcelona let them. It's because Barcelona can't do anything else about it right now. So they're still super dangerous. They still have a ton of talent, but they don't dominate games the way they did. And Bayern comes in with the right mindset, which is we're going to be on the front foot. We're going to control the game. If it's Gnabry on that left side with Alphonso, like they put them pushing forward, they'll control the space and they'll control where the game is played. They just have to go about doing that. But I think Bayern are favorites in this game. That doesn't mean Barcelona can't win. You would never say that with the attacking pieces they have. And the one question is if they get some more pieces back because Vidal was out for the last game, Busquets has been out, all those injuries, maybe they're even stronger, but the team that beat Napoli was not convincing at all.
Checking out the other quarterfinals, you've got Atalanta versus PSG, Leipzig versus Atletico, Manchester City against Lyon. What matches have you salivating and why?
I'm going to leave you Atalanta PSG because I know you're pretty jacked on Atalanta, which I respect. Or is that not the one you wanted?
I was going to be like, you know what? Normally in these situations, the one that you really don't want to watch turns out to be the big, like the craziest game. So I think Leipzig Atletico, something wild is going to happen. There'll be a goal bonanza or three red cards. So I was going to pick that one because that is the one probably that's least enthralling, maybe. I don't know.
It has the unique like clash of styles. Atletico, they like to keep things tight, play back. Red Bull RB Leipzig like to play on the front foot. They like to press. They like to get some pace to the game. And now they don't have Timo Werner, which is fascinating as well.
The Timo loot not being there kind of loses their sting. But you're right. And also, I Sabitzer is one of my favorite players to watch in general, who gets like no press. But I love watching him play.
And I'm really excited to see Tyler Adams at this level. If he's healthy and can go, I think he's legit. I think he's on par with Pulisic as talent for the U.S. national team, but he just struggles with injuries. And to watch him do it against, I think will be, you know, Atletico still has one of the best central midfields in the world. If he plays at right back, the opportunity to go up against some of the best wingers in the world. So that's really cool. On the flip side, Atalanta PSG, this is going to be like 9-5. So I'm here for all of that.
Moving on, looks like Jonathan David to Lille is confirmed at this point for about 27 million euro. What is the ceiling for Jonathan David? And do you see this as an opportunity for Lille to put him in the showcase and then sell him a couple more years for more money?
Yeah, so Nicolas Pepe came from Lille 2 years ago, and then Osimhen was there this year and got sold for, the numbers are floating anywhere between $60 and $80 million to Napoli. So that's your ceiling for Jonathan David. He's the next piece that comes in there. The potential is to be one of the most expensive signings in world history at one of the top four or five clubs in one of the top five leagues in the world. That's what Lille wants to do. And that's what he's being brought in to become. They have consistently, what I like about Lille is they've spent the money they've gotten to an extent to replace those guys and continue things. They don't just pull from the academy. They like go out and make an effort to say, well, if we made $27 million on this player, we're going to spend 7 to 10 on a replacement who can already play at a high level. And we think can go even higher. Renato Sanchez is a great example. They didn't give up on him. They gave him an opportunity, same as Osimhen, who left Wolfsburg as a bust. And then they make all that money later on. Sanchez has been good for them as well. I think we'll probably talk Magalhães for the next few weeks as De Vang has the binoculars out and is on watch.
His family is we're tracking his family following him on Instagram. Like, I think his brother followed Instagram yesterday. So we're 85% sure that this is going to go down.
So, but that's the club you're talking about. And that's, I think exactly what Jonathan David needs. Yeah. And it's a place for him to get good minutes.
I think when he was first linked to Lille, it was like, I think people who know are like, oh, they know what they're doing at that club. They spot talent really well, and they like to make profit on transfers. So if in terms of the next step, this makes sense for Jonathan David. So I think everything you said, David, is on the right track. Player comparison, it's very, like, Jonathan David runs at defenders. He runs in between lines. If you talk about ceiling, I think maybe in a ideal, crazy, optimistic world, he becomes a player like Son without maybe the blazing speed, but he's a quick player who challenges defenders and finds key avenues to get into. Jonathan David, I think, in Lille, I wonder though, David, like, is the worry that the expectation is that he is supposed to be going for that Pepe number, right? Is that the fear?
I don't think that's a worry, because they've clearly shown at Lille that they can handle, you know, bringing the next guy along without putting too much on their shoulders. I think they have a structure with enough talent in it that it's not like he steps into a barren team and he has to compete. And I think when you look at Lille selling players to Milan and Villa in the Premier League and Napoli and all that stuff, if David had gone to any of those places, everyone would be happy. So he's just one step away, but he's going about the process in the right way. And I know you want him to play in Champions League. I think that's the one upsetting thing, is that Lille are Europa League. They're not in the Champions League spot. But he seems to understand the process, which to me as a fan is even more exciting. Like, this young guy isn't just going to the biggest name that's connected to him. And he's not just finding, you know, a team that he grew up watching. Like, he understands this process and is making the correct move for his career. And I think that's awesome to see from the outside of, like, that's how you have a player who's successful for 15 years.
Keeping on with North America, it was reported this morning that midfielder Blaise Matuidi would join Inter Miami on free transfer. Thoughts on the World Cup winner going to Miami? Is this the right fit? Does it matter when a player is that talented?
So I definitely read this as Inter Milan this morning when I read the news. I'm like, holy crap, okay, interesting. Interesting move, power play in Serie A. Inter Miami, not the name I associated with Blaise Matuidi if we were to leave, but I think it makes sense. Maybe the Pirlo influence is having its effect immediately. That midfield, I think UA fans soured on Matuidi in recent times, but he gave them a lot of good years. It's a good signing in the way that I think he has more years left in him to play at the top level, but I am less certain about the fact that Inter Miami, if you're going to invest funds like that, is it an issue? Does it matter if they're using this kind of money on a player like that who maybe doesn't necessarily move the needle in a market like that, David? Or, like, football-wise, does Blaise Matuidi be an instant impact guy in MLS? Is that the profile fit for a player like this?
The only way this makes sense is if he's a TAM signing. If he's the third DP, then it's wrong on every level. It's wrong on off the field stuff, and it's wrong on the field. He's 33. He's not a chance creator. He's not a goal scorer. The way he plays, I don't think personally, I know he's lost some playing time at Juve. I don't think he's dropped his ability, but he's a guy who covers a ton of ground, who's always in the right spot, who's always first, you know, to be an option off the ball. At 34, doing that in Miami, traveling around the U.S., that's a pretty big stretch.
I don't understand. Like, why is Inter Miami doing this? I think that kind of player you can find in MLS.
Agreed. But if he's a TAM signing, and, you know, he got bought out at Juve, so if they don't have to pay a transfer fee, and he's like, yeah, I want to come live in the U.S., I'll take $1 million to $1.5 million a year and live in Miami and hang out, then it starts to make more sense. Because if they bring in a DP10, now you look at a midfield with him. You have Pizarro, who can play across the front three or deeper. You've got young strikers. Now it all starts to fit together. And that's why. And I still think, and this might be a personal thing, but, like, the vibe off that French 2018 team is, like, joy and happiness and cool. And like, he's a part of that. So yeah. I think there's some people once he's there who will connect with him, but he's not going to bring people out to the stadium. He needs to be one of two moves that comes. And it'll be interesting because it's the other one, a guy like David Silva that feels like Inter Miami kind of threatened to be different. And then they end up with two 34-year-old, 33-year-old, you know, Europeans. That's not different. But I think Matuidi is big that he plays at such a high level. I was talking to someone today and it was like, you know, Rooney played as a, could play as a 10 for DC United because he's so good at soccer. Matuidi probably has some of that. But he's not going to turn them into an MLS Cup contender. I don't think he turns them into a top five team in the Eastern Conference. He probably turns them into a playoff team as an addition. So I'm back and forth on it, but I need to see what it what it's all a part of.
Last headline before we move on. After finishing up with Oliver Platt last week, it was immediately announced that former TFC striker Mo Bobuli had signed with Hamilton Forge. Are you guys excited about this move like I am?
I deny the use of Hamilton. We only go Forge on this show. We only go with the name, you. Sean.
Thank yeah, you.
That's disgusting of you. You're a fake Canadian. But Mo Bobuli is a baller. So I respect anyone who's willing to take guys on and do ridiculous things on the field to embarrass players, because then you get really fun stuff.
Agreed. I read some people maybe trying to temper expectations for Mo and what he will do at Forge. I think that's fair. They have a pretty good idea of what they're doing at that club and the system they're playing with. And I think it might be tough for Mo to come in and maybe light it up, but impact player off the bench, perhaps, or in a quick tournament like we have at the Island game, someone can catch lightning in the bottle, a player with Mo's ability, which David alluded to, someone who can create something out of literally nothing. I just want a crazy highlight that goes viral that he can do because he's got that ability. That's what I hope for.
And that's it for headlines. After the break, Devang and David break down MLS's back final and plus chat about the return to play.
Welcome back to a football podcast. Today, we're previewing the MLS's back final between Portland and Orlando, as well as chatting the regular season play return format that MLS is going to try and do, which... Yes, I'm muffling some laughter because I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll get into it. Where are the Canadian teams going to play, etc. Plenty to get to there. But David, we finally made it. MLS is back final. Did you call this? You didn't call Portland, Orlando, right?
No, not at all. No part of this that I call. I had Columbus as my winner at the beginning, and I still recognize them as winners because they lost on a bogus scenario. Yeah, I did not call this at all. I've been impressed by Portland. I didn't think they'd be this good in this competition, and Orlando's been awesome. Like, I didn't see this coming at all. I thought Pareja would get them to grind out results, and I thought they had a chance, but I did not see them playing the soccer they've been playing over the course of this. I still think the win over LAFC is like one of the best performances we've seen from a team in a while, but in Orlando, probably the best in their history.
I think when you watch them beat teams that press them and the way they played out of the back, like doing it once or twice, perhaps you can say, well, we're not quite sure yet. That's impressive. But is that really what this team is about? But the amount of times they did it against teams that in this tournament looked really good themselves. Like, I thought San Jose was an extremely good team coming into that game that Orlando dealt with. Like, it was just another game for them. And that's how impressive Orlando's been in Portland. I've said it on the show repeatedly. I watched the first two games before everything shut down, and I was not impressed with what was going on there. But they had some new players. And all of, I think the system of how important Diego Valeri was going to be was changing, obviously, was not the focal point. But they found out, obviously, that Seb Blanco can carry them to these heights. So it makes sense that these teams are here. Overall for the tournament, I think, from when it began and with the issue with Dallas and Nashville to where it is now, I have to say overall, I think MLS has to be pleased with how it all worked out.
Yeah, I think that was the first or second episode we ever did. And we were like waiting on the FC Dallas news. We didn't even know about Nashville at the time. And it just felt like there's no way this happens. There's no way this makes it to the end. And since then, it's been pretty successful. You have to credit MLS. They were aggressive about like, you know, delaying the Sporting KC game, delaying the TFC games when there wasn't positive. They weren't getting negatives. They were getting inconclusives just to be safe. And all of that ended up working out. And I thought the soccer was better than I expected. And I actually thought the knockout stages, I was a little worried that I had interviewed Caleb Porter right before the competition. And he's like, well, the group stage, the regular season, that's the most important. And then the knockouts, they're like open cup. You want to win. It's nice to win, but you're not going to like risk things. And I thought teams were super aggressive. They were aggressive with the players they chose to use. Like guys who maybe were questionable playing large chunks of the game because it meant that much to them. And we've seen the same kind of lineups consistently. It wasn't like, okay, this is a whatever game. We're happy to get out of the group stage. We're happy to get whatever points we got. Let's like throw a few kids out there. So I think it's meant a lot and it's made the soccer a lot better.
Meaning a lot. It's something that you hear bandied about a lot, and that fear of maybe the tournament not meaning a lot and some of the players not taking it seriously. I think the Nani's performance has been a revelation. The fact that it's clear he gives a damn and he's been the best player on his team, which has been really good at this tournament. I think that's been awesome. But David, when we talk about key matchups for the final itself, is Nani involved with that one for you? Is in terms of what do you think can break this match?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of different parts to this game, but I think when you look at Orlando, the biggest thing is the wings. Juan attacking from right back, Chris Mueller coming off that wing as well, and then what Nani can do and what João Moutinho has done, which has been phenomenal in this competition, that's a huge question mark. And I think that's the biggest weakness for the Portland Timbers is their fullback play. One of the things that like oddly went under the radar was João Moreira left to go back to River Plate during the COVID-19 layoff. And Chris Duval's played well, but he just has never gotten some of that speed back that he lost when he broke his leg. And so he's going to have to go one-on-one with Nani, which is where Minnesota lost the game. It was Dotson's inability to control Nani. Moutinho's going to get forward. So you got to have help defensively from whoever's playing either a three-man midfield, if you play a Polo or Paredes in there with Williamson and Chard to give extra help, or Valeri or Blanco or someone else like that out on the wings doubling back. That's where the game's going to be won or lost, I think, for both these teams. And that's where I think Orlando, that's what they want to do, but there's no way to stop them because you can't cover both wings with everyone. And Pereira is good enough in the middle to, if you throw all your midfielders out wide, then he can come inside and pick up the ball and create opportunities. So it's not easy to close this team down, but you have to win those battles at fullback.
I think that's the one. Pereira versus Diego Chara is the matchup for me in terms of can Orlando finish this off and finish an amazing run led by Pereira, who's done the job against some pretty formidable foes in this tournament, David. Like Ozzy Alonso did it against him. Wanyama did it against him. I think he's been a revelation as well for Orlando overall. But you know, the Chris Mueller hype was huge at the beginning of the tournament and in terms of lighting it up and a next young star, maybe striker. But MOCC might be another guy that could break this game. Awibase, sorry. Yeah, I'm butchering the pronunciation. You got to help
Abobase.
Me. Abobase, that's
yeah.
It.
But the thing with Mueller is Mueller came out hot. Okay, he's quieted down. Now Nani's gotten there. So for this team, not center forward. It's those two wing spots that carry their goal scoring, and they have enough ability on both sides to alternate it. Obobese's been so good in this tournament, and he's gone from, okay, young potential player with enough attacking pieces around him that he'll get goals, to he now dictates moments in the game. His runs pull center backs around. He finds the game where he wants it, and he creates dangerous opportunities. He's taken a step or two, and it's been really cool for me working a lot with Charlie Davies the last month or so to hear him talk about runs and center forwards and the things you can do, and to watch it happen with Obobese of his understanding of what his role can be. And it's not just stretch the back line, come back in and pick up the ball every once in a while. Otherwise, get out of Valeri and Blanco's way. He's carving teams open. He's creating opportunities and spaces for those teams. So he's been really good. And what's nice for Portland is they have a few match winners. And in a final, there's a decent chance, especially after the month or so it's been, that maybe the game falls a little flat on energy and there isn't really an obvious opening. And in a game like that, Blanco, Valeri, and Obobese are all three match winners for Portland, which I don't think Orlando has the same just pure quality as they do.
break the prediction down into two parts, David. So your prediction won, but also which team would be better for the CCL, which is the coveted prize on the line?
It's a good question. I've been thinking about it a lot. So I'm picking Orlando to win this game. Just based on everything I said.
What did I just hear though?
Yeah, I know. It's wild. But I just think they've been so good. And I think they've gotten better as the tournament has gone along. And I think that they are clean in the back. I love Seba Mendez in midfield covering the ground. And you mentioned Pereira. Like, he's been amazing in build out. He's been intelligent in the way his movement controls the other team. And let's just say for some reason, Portland's like, you know what? We're going to clog up the wings. I think he's been good enough on the ball to cut you open and beat you. So I really like the way Orlando's built and the things they're doing going forward for CCL in like a weird MLS brainy way, because I want an MLS team to win CCL. I think Portland being in it forces them to continue to spend, because I think they've spent at a pretty high level over the last 2 years. And I think being in CCL, hosting CCL games, having the chance to win that, because you know Seattle's in it next year, and most likely you're going to see another big LAFC or whatever in it as well. I think that kind of pushes them. It'd be cool to see how Orlando reacts to that. But I think for Portland, it would mean a little bit more. It'd be taken a little more seriously because of who they are. And I don't know, a February game with a Mexican team in Oregon, like with a full stadium, that's a pretty yeah. cool idea.
Well, this is a bit boring, but I'm choosing the exact same answer. I think Orlando's going to win. I need to get Nani.
Did you think it was going to be a take? So you were upset with my pick?
I did. Yeah. I thought it was a throwaway kind of like, haha, it's Orlando. But no, you reasoned pretty well. And I think for many of the points you listed as well, I'm picking Orlando. I think finishing off the project that they started with a win would be fitting. This franchise has been lost in a complete abyss since they came in, and to see kind of come together in their home, quote unquote. I know it's not their home, but I think it would be a nice end for a lot of good people involved. And also, the Nani story has been fantastic. But tournament wise, I think Portland is a good set up to make a run in the CCL with the team they have, and those game breakers you mentioned, David, as well, and the geographical elements that they could offer a team from Mexico or Panama or where else. So that is my pick as well. But David, there's other news. The season is going to continue after this. And I guess that is kind of where we'll go next, because MLS's back will finish, but MLS will return to play with a revised schedule that includes 18 regular season games in a phased approach. The first phase will consist of most teams playing 6 matches against regional opponents through September 14th, with the exception that FC Dallas and Nashville, the two teams that we mentioned could not play in MLS's back due to coronavirus cases, they're going to play 3 extra games against each other to make up for those games. David, there's a lot to consider, I think, about this. But overall, your thoughts on this plan? I think the other main one for me is, do you think this is necessary to do at this time?
Necessary, do you mean like playing at all, playing at home sites, or playing at home sites potentially with fans?
Even in that tiered approach, I think you can answer it that way. Because I think in one way, is it necessary to play at all? I can understand why it would be. I think there's some issues in terms of like needing these games to happen, yes. But I think in some tiers to what you laid out, I don't think some facets are necessary.
I would agree with you. I think that's the big one that's popped out is the fan thing. I said it in talking about the tournament previously, but like I didn't think the bubble would work the way it did. And when we talked, listen, you could look at it one hand. Dallas and Nashville getting sent home is a percentage of your league that didn't play in this tournament, and that alone was a failure. I don't see it that way. I think that the decisiveness from the league to like take 2 teams out of the tournament right at the start and move some games around right at the beginning shows that they're willing to do what's necessary in big moments to keep these competitions going. But just based on what's gone on with Major League Baseball and the decisions that have been made in college football, which is like, it seems a little bit odd. I think MLS has won some favor with the way they handled the bubble. And so I think Luis Robles had a comment where he was like, it worked for us once, so we're going to trust MLS for now. And I think there's something fair in that. But I would assume the chuckle that you had in your voice when you first started talking about this is what you have every time you hear about the United States and coronavirus connected. And that's kind of how I feel, of just like people haven't handled things well And I think when you watch the USL games, you see fans in the crowd who are not handling it correctly. And everything we see on social media and all those things about people around this country have not handled things right. And so I think it's just dangerous bringing fans into the stadium. And I think it's dangerous to trust local authorities, because local authorities on a lot of levels have shown that they're not following the proper protocols and they're not following the proper science. So I'm pretty conflicted about it, same as I was about the bubble. But that one worked, so I'm like willing to consider it from the start.
I mean, that's where I fall on this. I think we've seen how it can work across multiple sports, and it's this bubble format, and we've seen how it does not work, and only one league has tried it and continues to try it, and that's Major League Baseball, which is an ongoing disaster in North America. I think they've tried it in Europe as well, traveling more, but in terms of North America, that's really the only comparison we can make, and that has shown us that I don't think this is the best idea. You maybe could have got creative, another bubble, a winter bubble or something to end the season with teams having that expectation.
Or maybe training. Regional bubbles rather than sending teams around.
But I saw an SKC executive saying like this is something that financially doesn't make sense for them to do, but the fans wanted them to come back to be in the stands, and like this is a fan driven thing. And I think that to me is the most upsetting aspect about this, and the fact that we are this far into this pandemic and yet we're still making decisions based on what people want to do or like what people feel like doing. I think it's outrageous. It's bizarre to me that they want fans at all to be included. And I think even if you were like, okay, like I guess they'll try and do what MLB is doing, because MLB doesn't have fans. But to add that element into it, I think is just, you're right. Optically, they won some battles. I think the way MLS is back started and with the teams having to get killed out of the, or taken out of the tournament, sorry for using the word killed, but like taken out of the tournament, to do that, I thought was impressive for them. And I thought they did win some points and to manage to kind of control that. But this, I think they've lost a lot of favor and rightfully so. And that doesn't make any sense to me, to be truthful.
So, and I would say one of the things about the way it worked for MLS was, I think the way that things went down with a few positive tests and then what happened with Nashville and Dallas, I think MLS players are more aware of what they have to do right to be successful, when I think just MLB players and other sports as well didn't have that recognition coming into things. And then once it starts, there's no way to stop it. It's a 2-week thing. I understand testing, but like, we don't know enough about this. So I think there's a chance that you could be successful, because we talked to Walker Zimmerman today and like he was on a team that this happened to. And so they now know that every little thing matters and the way they have to handle themselves, which I don't know that you had that understanding for Major League Baseball coming into it. But on the flip side, there's nothing going right in the U.S. right now that guarantees that any of this will work. So it just seems hard to think it will end up positive.
Do you think the form of the MLS is back tournament will carry over to these games? Like, do you think there will be the trends that we saw kind of pop up in Orlando flare out and we'll see them in these regional games?
I think so. I think some of the teams that perform poorly, like in New York Red Bulls, obviously we didn't see Dallas. Dallas, I expect a little bit from a Colorado Rapids. I think they'll turn things around. I think some of those teams, tournaments get weird, right? Where you lose the first game, you're behind the ball a little bit in another game early on and things get difficult. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with Atlanta though, because I have no idea.
100%. I think that will be, I mean, Kubo Torres bagging some goals. Hey, that would be fun. That'd be hilarious to watch. I think it's going to be such a different atmosphere for the Canadian teams as well in terms of what they're going to do. The border is closed. It's not going to open anytime soon. And rightfully so, they might have to do what the Blue Jays are doing in terms of setting up in Buffalo, setting up a hub city where they can play out of and travel out of. I really, really do not. I don't know how strong the MLS Players Union can be in this regard, but I think that would be a non-starter if I'm playing on any of these Canadian clubs.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate for teams in Canada who your country and society has handled this correctly. So now you have to leave and go live in the place that hasn't, because you guys can't play there. Honestly, I thought if NYCFC doesn't have a stadium, move them up, make them quarantine for 2 weeks, and have them play in Canada with the other three teams. You've got four teams, then you can play a sizable chunks of game, and then you try and put them into a playoffs where it's more reduced schedule for less time. The only thing that does make sense, the rumor came out about Red Bull Arena with TFC, is the way that it's being planned, which is you'll travel in and out basically for every game, whether it's driving or flying. You'd actually think you'd want to be as close to as many MLS teams as possible. So rather than doing a situation in Buffalo, you want to be in an MLS city because that gives you an X amount of games that you don't have to travel for, which is going to be super taxing on these teams. So I'd be surprised if one of the Canadian MLS teams did have to come down here to the US and set up camp that they didn't do it in an already existing MLS environment. But I don't know all the details.
The Canadian hub aspect as well, like BMO Field is being used by the NHL as the hub city area for the Eastern Conference, and that won't be available for a while. So maybe Toronto is out of the picture. Vancouver's out west. Does Montreal and Toronto go to meet them perhaps? Where there's been a real small number of cases. I think there's a lot of things that they have to figure out. MLS has said they're going to work with the clubs to figure out a plan, but I guess at the end, David, it's like they got to get to the same amount of games played, and they don't care how many times they played the same team. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, we will see. Yeah. We will see records based on some pretty hilarious matchups. But I think we've seen weird stuff with sports in coronavirus age and yeah. empty stands and thrown together tournaments and different formats. But I wonder how amped up people are going to be for maybe the third meeting with Montreal. In a couple weeks. Like, I don't know if it's going to be like pulling teeth or people will just be super excited to watch their teams play. I think there's a lot of questions to be asked, answered by this plan. And I'm sure there'll be some more information as the weeks or days go on going forward. But we look forward first to Orlando versus Portland on Tuesday night to conclude MLS's back. It should be a good game. But after the break, we're going to hit up the mailbag, hashtag AskAFP, and get to your questions coming up now.
Welcome back to a football podcast. It's now time for everyone's favorite mailbag segment, Ask AFP. Thanks for everyone who sent in the questions this week. We had a pretty good bunch to pick from today. If you didn't get a chance to send in your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. We're starting with Tristan. What is your over-under on the number of clubs that will have COVID complications when home market matches resume?
Whoa.
Half is the line, right? So I think over is my bet. Half. So over half?
Over half the clubs. Wow.
COVID complications being tests, positive tests, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. We can play with that. Or at least the inconclusive tests. I'll include that as well.
Right.
Oh, if you're doing inconclusive, then yeah, half. At least half. Because anything that's not a positive comes back as inconclusive, how many tests you're running. But the USL has moved a number of games. And they're not testing nearly as much as MLS will be. I think they're testing once a week, which is a thing on its own. And MLS is saying they're going to some extent test, I think, every other day, if not every day. So I'll agree with Devang. I don't know what that'll end up meaning. Like, how quickly can you isolate those players? Do you have to postpone games because of it? That, I don't know any of that. But, you know, I'm always free if anyone needs like a just in a shift 25 minutes at center back. I think I could do it.
I've been having dreams for the last 15 years of subbing into a game and not having any idea what to do. So I'm ready too.
and when I say like half, not to be trite, but I think it's going to be tough. Like to say that some areas are doing better than others in the States would be an understatement as well. Like, I'm not saying it's the same situation all over the place, but I think these complications, as we've seen, it depends how serious you want to treat it. And like what you're labeling as a complication is important, because I think if this is going to run well or run properly, like they have to be super vigilant. And in MLB, you have some clubs being really, really vigilant and some clubs not, and they have to play each other. And then that causes all sorts of problems. So yeah. I think that's something to consider.
Moving on, Massive Narc asked the question in the CPL tournament. Who do you think is going to be the best newcomer and the one thing that you're looking forward to seeing?
David, as the resident CPL head, I'll let you take first stab at this.
Oh, I get first stab? Well, the thing I'm most excited about, I think, is pretty obvious, which is Pa Modokad, Pacific FC. I'm obsessed with Pa. He's one of the nicest human beings on the planet. He's a soccer genius. I'm very excited to see him finally get to coach his own team for the first time. on newcomer. You go first, Evang, while I consider.
Sure.
Can I say one of the TFC loan guys or no?
You can. I mean, you could. You could.
Okay. You go first, Evang.
I'll go with Alvaro Rivero for York 9 for a couple of reasons. I think the profile is interesting. Like, he's been around football, quote unquote, like the places football is at in terms of pedigree. And I think he's at an age where he's still not even entering his prime at 23. And I think for this to work, it would maybe establish this transfer connection better than what we've seen in the past when players from Europe are coming over to North America to play professionally. I think we're used to a different caliber of player, usually on the older side, usually more well-established, who's played at some bigger club, but is really on the downside. I think this is a shot for Alvaro Rivero to probably prolong his career somewhere else or even get on to other things after this. So it's a lot on his plate as well. And what I'm most excited to see is York 9 in general as well, because I think as well as tough as the first year was, I think there's some real expectations, as we've commented on this podcast in the past, and it really starts at the Island Games. And I think there's no real quick time for some feeling out process. They're expected to do well and get results, so I think my eyes will be on them.
So my two here, both Edmonton players, so I guess maybe I'm like leaning FC Edmonton. Tariq Mohammed on loan from Toronto FC is a player that I loved watching at TFC too, and I got to call a couple of games he played. He's got like some serious swagger. He's got like the potential to get punched in the face, but also be your favorite player on the field. And then Kevin Allemans, an interesting one, as Devang just said about like extending your career and where do you find your feet and all those types of things. It could be really interesting if he hits the ground running in CPL.
Moving on, Amish asks, is this the worst Barca team we've seen in the last 20 years?
20 years is an interesting time frame because from 2000, you've got like those Rivaldo teams, which moved into Ronaldinho, who's the greatest player of my lifetime and I'm obsessed with. Then you had that, the end of the Rijkaard era, which was really bad, into Pep. So I think that would be your one competitive year. What was it, 2007, 2008, where they didn't win anything. They brought in PK, they brought in Pep, and all of a sudden they became like the best team in the world again. Outside of that, yes. I would say, yes, this is a team, as we said in the breakdown, like very little direction. They kind of are just like at the will of Messi, both on the field, it seems like, and off the field. And I think this is the team that has the least pieces that can play at Messi's level or play with Messi at a high level. And so they're just so reliant on him now that they're no longer the dominant force that they were.
I'll say yes, and I'll say I'm enjoying the hell out of it, to be honest. I like seeing
Team Barca Chaos Devang.
I like seeing Barca fail. They personally caused me many tough moments in my my sports fandom life, in big games for Arsenal as well. And I think when you're riding so high for so long, it's nice to come down with the commoners like myself. So things are not all rosy at Barca, and it's a damn shame. It's my thought.
Do you have a Spanish team today?
Not really. You know, not really. I think because of the Galacticos, I think I would lean Real Madrid if you had to ask me in that
makes
comparison.
This way more obvious. Okay.
But no, but I'm not. I'm a Messi guy, though. I like Messi himself, but I'm not going to go to the Bernabeu and scream my head off. Though I've seen a game there. I was not there as a cheering Madrid fan. But I for me, La Liga is about seeing those guys lose to other teams and enjoying in those matches. And I think when Barca loses to Osasuna away, I'm like, yeah, that's great. I love it. So it's good stuff.
Moving on, Sasha asks, is Frank Lampard, the manager, a massive fraud supported by weird media narratives? Yes or yes?
I'd like to go outside the box here, and I'd like to say yes, Sasha.
Extreme yes. Extreme yes. It fits. It's not exactly a one for one, but the Jordan Henderson like player of the year stuff, where it's like English guy, like, yeah, he's the next world superstar manager. Let's reward him for choosing to make his sacrifice. And like, he could have given it up and just continued at Derby and just been a guy resting on a great career, but he gave it all up to manage Chelsea and gift them with his wonderful talent. I think it's a lot much. I think when Stevie G makes that move to coach in the Prem, it's going to be the same stuff. It's the same when they were players. It's Frank Lampard, a fantastic player, don't get me wrong, but I think the lionization started so quickly when he became a manager that we can't even judge him properly. But don't get me wrong, you're going to see Mason Mount play over a bunch of other guys on that team next year when he doesn't deserve it, and we'll have to ask if he's a fraud, and the answer might be yes.
So I agree with everything you said, except I actually don't stand, but I actually thought Frank Lampard was borderline underrated as a player.
You're right. You might be right. I think it's fair.
He was that good. He was lionized by English media because that's what they do. And Chelsea fans, I think everyone outside of that was like, yeah, of course. Like, they have Drogba, they have Makélélé. Like, of course he's good. But like, for a guy his size to move the way he did, you know, because he was always called Fat Frank, which is fine. And I put it on this podcast just now because I think it's funny. But he kind of like it ignored his athletic ability, and he was just a freak goal scorer from that position and reading the game, all that stuff. Chelsea hasn't been great this year. And like, this idea that they had one transfer window ban, even though they pre-signed a bunch of players for that, so that they're like underdogs in some way, is ridiculous. And the idea that they've been any better than last year is also ridiculous. There's hope going forward, but they've already spent a ton of money. So I agree with Devang that if they're not good next year, there's no like he needs to settle in. Sorry, he got fired twice in a year, like 1 year back to back. So if that's going to happen, Lampard gets 1 year or 2 years and that's it. And I wasn't impressed by the team. I thought they came out the year and played with a little bit of confidence, but he seemed to not really understand. Did he want to press or not? And if he did, who were the guys that fit best? And he kind of waffled in who his team was going to be. And so I think going forward now, they've spent the money for a clear defined group, which is like, this is a team that should play high press. This is a team that should play in transition as much as possible. That's what Timo Werner picks. You've got Zajic, who can create when teams choose to not give you the ball and sit deep. But that's not the purpose of this team. And if he can't manage that and force that and turn them into competitive with the top two teams coming out of this year, then I would say, yes, he's a fraud of a manager. Ooh, fraud's an intense word.
That former Tottenham manager is waiting for Manchester United or Chelsea to slip first next year and for them to can one of their guys. That's my bold prediction.
Nice. Where's Pochettino going? Or do we not have enough time?
He was supposed to go to Juventus and then Pirlo took that job.
That's what I said. The longer he stays out there, he's in play for one of those two jobs. I feel like it makes too much sense.
It feels like he's already Atlanta United's coach at this point.
Jeez
Louise. If people are going to hire Pirlo to coach Juve, where else is he going to go?
I don't disagree. I think there's a better chance him coaching in MLS than he is another team in England.
Wow.
Ooh, spicy.
We all Salt Lake.
We're here for RSL.
This question comes from Cameron on the Patreon Discord. What are your favorite soccer books / must reads?
I was very excited about this one, Devang. And someone in the Discord chat, by the way, if you're not a Patreon subscriber and you do subscribe, you get to become part of the Discord chat, and it's awesome. I didn't even know about it till recently, so I'm super juiced about it. So one of the books that I would recommend to anyone who is interested about soccer history a little bit, but a lot of different things, is Soccer Empire by Laurent Dubois. It's a book about the 98 World Cup team in France, and it basically goes through each player and explains the like colonial background that led to that player becoming French and part of France. So you hear about North Africa and the Pacific Islands and Caribbean and all those things. And then it talks about the like racial issues in France throughout that World Cup and all those things. It's an incredible book. It hits on a lot of different things. So I'd highly recommend that one.
Great pick. I was reading Brilliant Orange, The Neurotic Genius of Dutch Soccer by David Winter before the pandemic began. I took it out from the library. I stopped reading books really during the pandemic. I'm not sure why, but I felt like the real news was important to keep up on all the time. So things that were stagnant and in the past were not relevant. But then I got a notice in the library telling me that, shockingly, after many months, I have to return this. So I'm just finishing it, but it's been a great book. A lot of great quotes. I think the bluntness of the Dutch and just the way Dennis Bergkamp just being like, I guess I prefer to score pretty goals only, is it's classic good stuff. And it's a cool look into, there's just so many iconic names. And a lot of the things we watch today are based off some of the stuff that these guys did. So I would recommend that one.
Dutch people are so fascinating. Just like my concept of like, oh, like total football. They believe in like beautiful soccer. And it's like, no, but they're militant about beautiful soccer. And it's that like cross divide that they end up in, which is like so wild. I'd also throw out David Goldblatt's football, which is basically just soccer everywhere and the history of it. And it's awesome and all those things. And someone asked about series as well. If you watch the Leeds United series on Amazon, it's pretty good. I think it's better than the Sunderland one, mainly just because Bielsa's involved.
Have you seen the Anelka one yet, David?
No. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
No, yeah. I've seen clips. Like I've seen like the Wenger clip as well, but I'm going to check it out tonight. I've heard it's a bit of like a PR kind of vehicle, but it's such an interesting
cat. They all are.
Such an interesting, I know. I mean, like, honestly, like why else? They wouldn't be doing it if it was not going to be in some way in that shape, but he's a fascinating guy. I mean, expect like that time for Arsenal as well. Like it's like a, there's so many dominoes fall when Nicolas Anelka leaves, and I'm super excited to watch that.
And the existence of Anelka afterwards, I'm really excited as well. Was there was always a team that thought they could hit it big all of a sudden, or got new ownership, or wanted to contend, and Anelka was always like, he was the flag signing. Like, oh, you want to go from this level to this level? Then you go sign Nicolas Anelka. And he just like floated around, but always scored goals, and he's a fascinating personality.
Last question in Ask AFP. Tyler B, also from Patreon, asks, what is everyone's thoughts surrounding the FC Dallas DJ Cobra Paxton Pomykal hype video about soccer returning to Dallas?
Where's the kit? So I watched this today, and I have so many questions. The first one is DJ Cobra a European DJ, or is he American as his Wikipedia states?
What is it? Oh, really? What does that mean? He's American because he lives in the U.S. now?
But it said he was born in Cal, because like there's an accent that he was using in there that I was like, I wasn't sure if it was a meme thing or the whole. But I mean, the video itself, it's based on a meme, correct? Or am I now the oldest man in the world by the last question I just asked?
No. So Cobra is the nickname of Zdeněk Ondrášek, the center forward for FC Dallas. So I think Cobra is just Ondrášek DJing.
Okay. So what I did was legitimately look up DJ Cobra after I watched that. Holy shit.
So when they got to Orlando, they all had rooms on the same floor, but they couldn't interact. And they had like little porches. And he went out and just blasted music, like garbage European trance, because he's Czech. No offense to, I don't know who out there who would be offended by that. And he pretended to DJ. And my friend was actually on the room under him and was like, dude, I had no idea what was happening. I go outside and Cobra's just blasting music. So I think that's what's happening. So Paxton comes out and Ondrášek is just blasting gross Euro music and being like the comeback tour is on from the National Soccer Hall of Fame. Because I guess why not, right? When you have a stadium with no one else in it, you can kind of, this is what would happen if you were like home alone in a soccer stadium.
Man, so there is someone called DJ Cobra though, but this makes a lot more sense. Okay, I'm less offended by this video, and I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
Unless I'm wrong.
No, that makes way more sense. You would be correct. It makes way more sense. Okay.
Now we're going to have to go watch this video again, which is brutal. I didn't plan on watching this twice in my life.
There was no ad roll. There was no ad roll, which I appreciated. On there, I was expecting a 15-second ad, but there was nothing. So I'll thank them for that.
And that's it for Ask AFP today. Once again, hit up Twitter and use the hashtag Ask AFP, and we'll answer your question.
Sean, thank you very much. But before we go, you're not off the hook yet. We need to open up some of those sweet, sweet packs you got.
Let's see what we got, and I can butcher today. I'm getting better with opening these bad boys, but still not great.
That crinkle, authentic.
We start off with a Switzerland checklist, just the Swiss team. Ooh,
here's a good
one.
Checklist cards, because then you can keep track of all the cards you get.
We got, I think, one of my favorite players on a team that I didn't really like too much, but this guy balled. Kobe Jones.
Wow.
Kobe Jones was a hell of an attacker.
Wait, so in the 1994 World Cup, did you root against the United States?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
David, we all did. You understand that's what we do up here,
at
right?
At that point, they
never... Do you understand that this is the contract that we signed?
They hadn't won a World Cup game since 1950. They hadn't gotten a result in the World Cup since 1950. I didn't realize that you still had that angst in 1990. Oh, yeah. Already had it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Brett Hull switch to the United States stung this child pretty pretty hard. But I will say the Brazil US match was it was a game that I think I was starting to turn. It's that moment where you're like, I'm gonna actually cheer for the United States here.
And then we were robbed.
Sean, do you remember like in the 90s as well? I felt like the US Canada stuff was super hyped up. Like there was like a wrestling storyline every other week where it was like a weird like Canada flag burning scenario in a WCW ring. Whoa. Or stuff like that. Oh, yeah. So I don't know. I feel like there was that rivalry was pretty pronounced as that when I was a kid as well. So it was always
cheering
against.
Blue Jays win the World Series in 94, 95?
True, and there was wild stuff going around that as well, like in terms of like USA Canada. So I think that right, that like anti-American fandom stuff has always been pretty strong.
Cool, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
From Brazil, Marcio Santos. He's a 24-year-old center back with already at 24, already having 33 caps for the club.
Man, if it was Leonardo, I would have punched you in the face. If that's how that whole experience went down, whoa, I would not have been able to handle that. But yeah, shouts to that guy.
He might have, with that CV, he might have played in the Indian Premier Super League for a couple of years based on that track record. We had some of the random Brazilian guys.
Who'd you say it was?
Marcio Santos?
Yeah, okay. I just got to get that quick Google.
Older brother to Ronald Koeman. Erwin Koeman.
No. Wow.
Yeah. Brilliant, yeah. Orange. Yeah. Synergy. The Koeman brothers.
Just to put Devang's mind at ease, Marcio Santos played at Shandong Luang.
Okay.
And right, at Jundai, but never made it to India.
At least I'm glad he got to see some of Asia, though. That's comforting. Yeah.
And then a Colombian golden boot card, Eldolfo Valencia.
Nice. Hell yeah. Yeah. That's a legend. Have you watched Two Brothers? Two Escobars?
Yes. Everyone watched that? Yes.
That's
it's
a must.
My favorite 30 for 30.
There you go. It's a must watch 30 for 30. And Adolfo Valencia ended up playing in MLS. And his son played in MLS. One of four father-son combos in MLS history. I wrote this as a trivia question for Father's Day, whenever that was, a month back. So
you got to share them. You got to share them.
Is Cunningham?
Does anyone want to guess any?
No.
I'll give you a clue. One is Canadian.
The Bunburys?
Yep. Teal and Alex. Another one.
The Reynas? No.
No. Because Gio never played. But there's another one who's a young USMNT player now.
Curtin. Berhalter?
Yeah, actually, Berhalter at the time hadn't happened. So that's actually a good addition. Now that needs to be added. But that's a correct one. The Ferraras, David Ferreira and Jesus now.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's all of them. Maybe I'm missing one more, but that's pretty much it.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I wrote the trivia question, so I should know it.
That's another pack. That's it, folks. Before we go, if you could please leave a rating or a review on the podcast, that'd be incredible. Plus, hit us up on Twitter at @afootballpod. As well as head to our Patreon, www.patreon.com/afootballpodcast. And lastly, thanks to Dylan and Nick on the ones and twos, as always. And thank you to listening to A Football Podcast. We'll talk to you soon.